Good evening. Welcome to the Focus TV. Happy as always to be talking with you all. Joined tonight, we got Octavia Wyatt, Cardo Dudley Jr., Wilson Tarpe Jr., and we got a lot to get to. As always, it was a very busy weekend, in sports as a whole. Octavia's going to talk to you all about the NFC East as always at some point. I'm going to try to update you guys a little bit on the Wizards and Go-Go, some good college basketball as well. But Cardell, you were at a pretty good event this weekend, as we've seen by the highlights at the top of the show. The floor is yours. Tell everybody all about it.
Yeah, I was at Good Counsel. Every year they have a showcase, high school showcase called Xavier Classic. They invite teams from all over the area, about eight teams to come and battle. And in a tournament style, classic, it's not just you play one game and you move on. It's a tournament, where you battle for about 3 days if you can advance, and only one team is crowned champion at the end of the day. And obviously, with Good Counsel being the host, they would like it to be them on their home floor, but that just wasn't the case. As they fell to Archbishop Spalding, 97-82. Personally, it was one of the better high school level championship games I've seen in a long time. Obviously, the pandemic, the last couple of years, haven't seen many, But over the last couple of years, but pretty much doing this, media thing and scout thing since 2012, it was one of the best championship games I've seen. When I say they came out on haymakers, they came out on haymakers. And obviously, it was a lot on the line. Both sides had, top prospects in the area. Obviously, Archbishop Spalding has the top player in the area in my eyes, Cam Whitmore, who's committed to Villanova. He's ranked in the top 30 in the country. But Good Counsel has a top prospect in their own right. Guard Dylan Williams, he's going to Towson. They both put on the show. They deliver, and they got help from their teammates, from key teammates that's going to help them along the way throughout the season. Man, it was just a hell of a game. Well coached and well played, man. The first half, obviously, Good Counsel came out on fire. I think they started on a 7-0 run, and Archbishop Spalding answered, led by Cam Whitmore. He came down, hit a couple threes. The thing about him is, his shooting can be up and down, but not in this game. He's a super athletic kid. He has NBA All-Star athleticism right now. He's a man-child at the high school level right now. So when he's hitting his jump, it's pretty much nothing no one on a high school level can do, and that was the case. Him and Dylan Williamson for Good Counsel went back and forth, hitting shot after shot, three-pointer after three-pointer. They got help from Jordan Pennick for Archbishop Spalding, another senior guard, two sports star. He's also nice in football. He was right there with him, adding for Spalding, getting some key buckets as well, getting stops. And for Good Counsel, the guy that helped Dylan Williamson was Corey Chesley, who's a junior. Super athletic kid, coming into his own as a guard and for Good Counsel. They threw haymakers, man. And in the first half, Spalding shot 50% from the field and 40% from three, but Good Counsel shot 75% from the field and 64% from three. And a lot of those threes came from Dylan Williamson, who was 5-for-7 in the first half. In the second half, Archbishop Spalding, they cracked down on Dylan Williamson. In the first half, Dylan Williams had 23 points. Cam Whitmore had 20, by the way. Dylan Williams had 23 points. He only scored 7 in the second half. They really keyed in on him through traps and denied him and just tried to keep the ball out of his hands. And if he got loose, it was multiple players running at him to make the shot tough. And, that was a big key because they needed him to keep making baskets and whatnot, especially with Cam Whitmore doing what he did. I mean, my man wasn't going to be denied, man. That he kept going. He had 20 points in the first half. He had 20 points in the second half. He finished the game with a game-high 40 points and 11 rebounds, a 14-19 shooting, and 4-7 from three, 8-8 from the free throw line. That's what I mean, you know, like in a high school game, you know, like that was one of the best performances I've seen. He was just dominant. Dylan Williamson finished with 30 points and 5 assists. Corey Chesley, you know, he tried to pick up the slack best he could. It was a valiant effort. 19 points, 8 of 12, shooting 3 of 5 from deep, but it wasn't enough, man. Spalding, you know, knocked them off 97-82 to win the championship. Obviously, Cam Whitmore was named MVP after that type of performance. It was just one I'm going to remember for a long time, and I'm pretty sure one that he'll remember. And also, you got to understand this bragging rights, man. You know, they play in the Baltimore Catholic League. You know, obviously, good counsels in the WCAC. You know, it's been a long time rivalry between the two to see who's the better conference and whatnot. And, you know, right now, you know, Archbishop Spalding and BCL, they got bragging rights after this victory. Jordan Panic finished with 21 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists on 7-16 shooting from the field, man. Like I said, you know, Archbishop Spalding cracked down on Dylan Williamson in the fourth quarter. They pulled away by holding good counsel to 13 total points in the quarter. Meanwhile, they scored 28, you know, obviously with Cam Whitmore and Panic doing what they did. So it was a great game. You know, just one that's going to be for the record books, man. When you go to a high school showcase, that's the type of effort and energy you would like to see. And it's kind of shaky these days, unfortunately, but they delivered. You know, they lived up to the hype, man. And all you could do is respect it. My standouts from the Classic, you know, I'm going to start off with, you know, the first team. You know, I got 5 players that I just named to the All Xavierian Classic team. And Ryan Blakey, you know, from Fairfax Christian, 5'8", point guard in the 2022 class. He averaged 15 points, 4.3 assists, 3.7 steals, which was a tournament high while shooting 88% from the line. He's a Muggsy Bogues clone. He's not exactly defensively at that level, where guys just completely say, I'm not going to dribble at all, I'm going to give it up. But he's a notch below that. Like, he's going to turn you multiple times. He's going to make you work, man. But on top of that, he can run the team. He's super athletic, and he can shoot the hell out of the ball, man. If he get daylight, it's his money. You know what I'm saying? But he's a true point guard, so he don't try to do that unless he has to, man. Super tough, but the thing that impressed me about him, he's a pest defensively. If you make a mistake anyway, ball handling-wise, it's a steal. It's not even no question. He's going the other way with it, man. And he was a one-man wrecking crew on that side of the floor, man. And he's one that really impressed, and I'm going to definitely try to keep an eye on him throughout the season. Because, you know, I love players that get after defensively, especially young players, because it seems like that's a lost art. Everybody's trying to just get buckets and shoot threes. This kid does it all, man. So I was happy to see that. Next up is Kennard Davis, New Hope Academy, 5'11 point guard. He's a junior. He coming out in the 2023 class. I know this. Some people may not like this, but I don't care. He reminded me a lot of Tony Archibald. That kid, he destroys you both ways. You know what I mean? It's not like if he scores, he's not going to get his assist, or if he's assisting, his scoring will be down. No, he's going to torch you and get everybody else to torch you. He averaged 28.7 points, 4.7 assists, which was a tournament high, 3.3 steals on 62% shooting from the field and 66% shooting from three-point range. And he scored the tournament high, 43 points, against National Christian Academy, White. He put on a hell of a show, man. I'm just like, yo, what the hell, man? Like, it was nothing nobody could do to stop him. And it was a fun matchup between him and Blakey, because they were going at it. But Fairfax pulled it out. You know what I'm saying? They had a little bit more help on Blakey's side. But if Kennard Davis ain't one of the best point guards in the area, I don't know basketball, especially at the performance he put on today. If he keeps that up throughout the season, he's going to have his fair share of Division I offers. And I mean high major. He's too talented. He dominated all weekend, man. And I haven't seen, especially to be a junior, a young point guard blend the scoring and assists like that while still being effective on the defense. Man, and damn, being that damn efficient, it just that's sick efficiency. 62% from the field, 60% from three. That's just ridiculous, man. So, you know, much respect to Davis, man. Hopefully he can keep up that type of impact throughout the season. Jordan Panic, just spoke about him, Archbishop Spalding, 6-foot senior guard, averaged 20.3 points on 42% shooting from deep. Just spoke on him and his impact and how he helped Spalding win the whole thing. I'm not going to elaborate too much more. Obviously, Cam Whitmore, You know, he won MVP 2022. Ford obviously going to Villanova. He led the tournament, averaging 29.3 points. Led the tournament also in rebounds, averaging 10.7. He also blocked 1.3 shots a game and shot 58% from the field. Like I said, he's a man child, man. He's Villanova has one coming. I love what Jay Wright does with players, how he develops them. You know, 3-4 star, he turns them into NBA players. So I can only imagine what he's going to do with this kid who's a 5-star, man. It's going to be a scary sight once he gets to coaching, once he gets to Villanova. And last but not least, Dylan Williamson, obviously the leader for the host team, good counsel, 6'1 point guard. He's going to Towson. He averaged 22.3 points, 4 assists on 62.8% shooting from the field and 61% shooting from three-point range. It was some hell of a shooting going on in the gym throughout the weekend, as you can see. So, you know, much progress to them. And the best of the rest, you know, Corey Chesley for good counsel, 6'4", junior guard, and forward. You know, he made a high impact. Like I just spoke about him, what he did in the championship game. Solomon Hillman for National, Christian White, 6'5", junior. Same guard forward, sniper from mid-range, man. If you leave it open, you leave him open, or if he gets open, curling or moving without the ball, mid-range is automatic. He has a lot of Rip Hamilton in his game. Nigel Howard, that's one kid to definitely keep an eye on. He's super talented. He's actually a sophomore. Fairfax Christian, 6'6". For his versatility is crazy, man. And he's super athletic, and he's skilled, man. You can tell he's still trying to figure out what he is. Once he figures it out, he's gonna do a lot of damage on the high school level. Drew McKenna, you know, with Glendale, 6'7", 2024 guard and forward. Reminds me a lot of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. You know what I mean? I know that's high praise, but that's the type of versatility he has as a guard, man. He can run point, he can be a shooting guard, and he can go down the fourth spot and do damage, man. He did it all. Just constant triple-double threat, especially on the high school level. And last but not least, C.J. Scott. He was another one of the unsung heroes for Archbishop Spalding, 6'5", 2022 class, senior guard, 6'5". You know, he's just solid, man. He's solid in every aspect, man. He can score on us. He's not as explosive as Cam. He's a notch below that, obviously, but he's highly skilled, man. You know, he can score from all three levels. Daily off the bounce, he's very shifty, even though he may not look like it. You know, guys, you can tell we're kind of sleeping on him. He's very shifty, got a nice handle, and he can finish at the basket at will. I think that's going to be his game at the next level, get to the basket, get to the free throw line, and make a teams pay that way. And he's also a solid passer. You know, he gets guys involved, and he's a versatile defender, man. You know what I'm saying? He don't really get beat too much, man. He was key for their run into the championship this weekend. So, you know, those are my standouts. And you know, watch the show for the highlights. You know, following, you know, when we get done with this, there's more to come. I have photos and stuff also posting that on social media. I also got extra, you know, clips. I couldn't do every game, but I got extra clips of certain players that I just mentioned that I'll have on social media as well.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to miss it at all. I talked to Cardell, I think maybe after the championship game, telling me about Cam Whitmore's performance.
And I spoke about him before. Yeah, you know, the AU, you know. So, now he's the truth, man. Everybody, it's a consensus, man. Everybody just like, yeah. That's what I'm saying. You know, I don't want to throw the one and done out there, but he's capable. He got the talent. So, you know, he go to Villanova and do what he's supposed to do, stay focused. If he ended up leaving early, I would not be shocked. You know, he's, man, like he got it. Let's just say that he got it.
They have a pretty good track record of sending folks to that that next level as well.
Yeah.
A very good track record. Look, we're going to take our first break of the night. When we get back, Octavia's going to talk to you about her favorite division in all of football. And I'm sure she enjoyed it because I think her team was on a bye week. So I can't wait to see how non-petty you're going to be about the rest of the division and the things that happen, considering who some of the teams played. But you're watching the Focus TV. We will be right back with Octavia in the NFC East. Welcome back to the Focus TV. As promised, Octavia Wyatt, the floor is yours. NFC East. What happened to your division this week?
Well, I guess it is my favorite division just because my team plays in it. But outside of that, it's not. But as you stated earlier, very good week for me. We were on a bye. It's amazing, exactly what we needed. And to be honest, just from my point of view, being an Eagles fan, it was a good week for us being on a bye and with the results that happened in the NFC East. And I will explain to you why. I'll go ahead and get this team out of the way because nobody really cares. They shouldn't even care. The Giants played the Chargers. Yeah, they played the Chargers. They lost to the Chargers. They had 21, Chargers had 37. Mike Glennon, if you guys don't know, Daniel Jones still is out. Mike Glennon started this game. He was 17 of 36, 191 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception, and 1 carry for 7 yards and a rushing touchdown. Saquon Barkley had 16 carries for 64 yards and 3 receptions for 31 yards with a touchdown reception as well. Kyle Rudolph had 2 receptions for 66 yards, and Elijah Penny had 1 reception for 3 yards and 1 touchdown. So you hear the touchdowns and you think, oh, maybe it wasn't that bad. But no, they were getting blown out. Most of these happened in garbage time. The Chargers came to play. His name is escaping me. Justin Herbert, who, if you didn't know, he had a big arm before. Like, just watching him do it, like, back-to-back weeks, it's magical, honestly. Like, I don't know what they were hiding his arm for so long for, but he hit many of long bombs, a bomb against a Guyton this week, like he did last week. But I mean, as far as the Giants, you know, they have officially solidified their 5th straight losing record, losing season. It's kind of tough for them there. Again, they did this whole trick play thing. They've had some success with trick plays over the past couple of games. But this one was just terrible. I don't even know if they did it. A fake punt and tried to pass it from the 38 yard line. Ball went right over the receiver's head. Like, it was just didn't really look that well thought out. But again, it's the Giants. Just like Wilson always says, bad teams do bad things. So I'm not surprised. It was just altogether bad. Like, I really don't even want to go too deep into it. I don't want to waste my time talking about them. It was just bad. Their biggest issues, their inability to be able to stop the run at all. I mean, Los Angeles ran the ball 37 times, 152 yards, and they scored on 7 of their 8 possessions. You can't win a game like that. Their time management was off in this game. Again, like I said, Saquon has never been right since this season started, and especially since he came back from the injury, 16 carries, 64 yards. We expect way more for him. And again, I don't know why he's still playing. I personally don't get it. Sit him down. Season's over. But I guess they don't want to give up because technically and mathematically, they are not out of the playoff race. With everybody, it seems like in the NFC, period, not just the NFC East, but the NFC, everybody seems to be 6-7. So there is a big rush to who's going to be in that final wild card spot, because again, there are so many teams that are 6-7. There are so many different tiebreakers. So technically, mathematically, they're not out of it. But they will have an interdivision game next week. We only have 2 games next week because we have 2 interdivision games next week. Next week, the Giants will play the Cowboys. So that should be interesting. Last but not least, there was only another game because we did have another interdivision game this week. The Cowboys played the Washington football team, and the Cowboys were victorious, beat the Washington football team 27-20. Dak Prescott was 22 of 39, 211 yards and 1 touchdown, 2 interceptions, and 7 carries for 15 yards. Ezekiel Elliott had 12 carries for 45 yards and 1 reception for 15 yards. CeeDee Lamb, 7 receptions, 61 yards. And Amari Cooper had 5 receptions for 51 yards and 1 touchdown. On the other side, Taylor Heinicke, was 11 of 25, 122 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 interception, 3 carries for 8 yards, and 1 fumble loss. He actually got injured in this game, so we saw for the first time Kyle Allen, who was 4 of 9, 53 yards, 2 carries for 11 yards, 1 fumble loss. And for your running back, we had Antonio Gibson, 10 carries, 36 yards, 1 fumble loss. And Cam Sims, 3 receptions for 69 yards and 1 incredible touchdown. I will give him that. But outside of that, I mean, it was Dallas defense was the story of this game. It wasn't even the offense. The offense, to me, wasn't clicking as well as it had in the beginning of the season. Their defense is just out of this world. Notice you didn't hear me say Terry McLaurin at all, which is their number one receiver. Trayvon Diggs kind of shut him down pretty much the entire game. I think he may have had two catches, but nothing that was anything worth mentioning in this game. Michael Parsons, I know I talked about last week, rookie defensive player of the year. I don't think he really wants just rookie of the year defensive player. I think he's really going for defensive player of the year. And to hear the quotes of him saying, like, the NFL's not hard, like, it's crazy. Like, it doesn't look hard to him either. It doesn't matter what team he's going against. Now, granted, the Washington football team were missing more players than they have recently. We know Chase Young is out. Montez Sweat was out. They missed a host of other linebackers due to COVID protocols, which is running rampant through the NFL and NBA. If you have not heard, there are many, many players that are on out of the game due to NFL and NBA protocols for COVID. So they were hit with that as well. They still, of course, lost Logan Thomas last week. JD McKissick still didn't play. And I mean, you can't win a game when you have literally every quarterback that you put in fumbles. Your starting running back, Antonio Gibson, who has had a case of the fumbles all year long, fumbled again and got benched during the game for Jared Patterson. Now, they did put a good fight up at the end. Holcomb with the pick six interception that brought them close to being able to, be in striking distance to win the game. But again, their defense just held it down for them the entire time. Randy Gregory being back, getting the interception. DeMarcus Lawrence being everywhere. Like I said, Michael Parsons being everywhere. And even Trayvon Diggs shutting people down. It was just like, honestly, their defense won the game. They put their offensive side of the ball in plenty of positions to score multiple points, but their running game was still off. They did miss Tony Pollard this week, if you did, as well as Ezekiel Elliott is still nursing that knee injury. So Corey Clement got a lot of rush running carries this week, but he hasn't played much at all this year, so it was really hard to get him integrated in it. Zeke was out for most of the second half until the score got close, and you saw him get back in the game, but he still wasn't very effective. So that's something that they really need to work on if they're looking at being, top seed, because now with the Cardinals losing last night, the number one seed is still kind of open. The Packers are currently in the number one seed. So everybody's fighting for their bye because there's only one bye this year. So, and they have a chance to win out. I think they do play the Cardinals. That's going to be their last probably really competitive game. They have a lot more conference games left, division games, excuse me. They play the Eagles again. They play the Washington football team again, and then they play the Giants. But then they do also play the Cardinals within that period of time, I believe. I just have to double-check the schedule. But they can win out. They're comfortably going to win the NFC East. Washington football team is still mathematically in it as well. They are still in the playoffs currently with the seventh seed on the wild card. But they're 6-7 as well. So much can change this week coming up. We have Thursday night games. We have Saturday night games this week as well and Sunday games. So it's going to be a really big shakeup. The Washington football team will play the Eagles next week. And like I said, the Cowboys will go ahead and play the Giants next week. So we have two interdivision games next week. It's going to be wild because you never know what happens in the division. Like I can't place it ever. I always have a thought process, but you really never know. And with Taylor Heinicke also, he had an injury that caused him to leave the game. So don't know how ready he's going to be to play next week. So if it's Kyle Allen, that's going to be a big change for them. And then with the Eagles, hopefully, the people that were hurt previous week, they'll be able to get back in. So it's just going to be a toss up. You never know who's going to win next week.
Yeah. The division races in the NFC are nuts everywhere. It's almost minute to minute on Sunday, from the 1 p.m. window to 4 p.m. window, fans are going nuts. Everything's changing. you got the teams that are good, and then you got everyone else who is somewhere around 500. Then you got the AFC. And, some divisions are crazy, and then, some people wrote off. They're still alive, like very much alive. And, again, we talked about this beginning of the year with football. There's an extra game. Everybody got to chill. The normal way we go about things, respect things, how quickly we've been able to rule people out of things in other seasons. There's a whole extra game, man, and your wonderful division because it's a law. they got all the division games on the last three, four games of the season.
It's so weird this year because last year, most of the times, like most people start with a game or two early on in their schedule in the division. But it's like this year, it was like one team played each other, and I was like, that was it until like this month. And it's like now everybody just play each other back to back to back to back. And who knows? I just have a feeling that some game is going to get flexed somewhere. I just really hope it's not my team. We don't do well on national TV. So
the fingers crossed. That's you and a lot of fans hoping for that. It's a lot of fans like, just keep us off TV. If we make the playoffs, don't let everybody see it. We don't want the first time everybody sees your team play to get waxed in front of everybody. But we're going to take our second break. Jamal Hayward and 9450 breakdown back this week. This week, breaking down a drop, dribble, and counter off it. Again, is breaking down a drop, dribble, and counter off it. It's very helpful for players that are heading overseas and or play overseas currently. That's followed by our second break. And when we return, we'll talk some Wizards and Go-Go. You're watching the Focus TV. Welcome back to the Focus TV. Again, I want to thank Jamal Hayward for the teach tape there. Very, very informative. It can help players out. All right, with the Wizards since last time we spoke, if you guys haven't been following us along, you know, follow the Focus TV on social media after every Wizards game, you got Wizards Outlook. For those of you that only catch us, you know, on a week-to-week basis, last week at this time, the Wizards were heading into what felt like a must-win game against the Detroit Pistons after losing three straight games. It took overtime, but Washington was able to beat the Pistons 119-116 thanks to a huge shot by Kyle Kuzma late in the game. They then came home to face the Utah Jazz. That game was pretty much all Jazz. Donovan Mitchell came out strong. The duo inside of Rudy Gobert and Hassan Whiteside tortured the Wizards. Those two combined to miss just two shots in a game while dominating the paint on both ends of the floor. Then the Wizards kicked off a four-game road trip out west Monday night against the Denver Nuggets. Nikola Jokic showed why he's in the MVP conversation as he had his team up by as many as 33 at one point. He would get ejected with about 6 minutes left. The Wizards made a furious rally attempt, but the Nuggets held on to hand to Washington another loss. So again, just a week later, in a span of 7 days, Washington's heading into what feels like another must-win game, only this time it's against a Western Conference foe. They'll be taking on the Sacramento Kings Wednesday night on the road. That game takes place 10 p.m. Eastern. They follow that up with a date against the Suns in Phoenix on Thursday before seeing Utah a week, from their last loss to Utah that Utah handed to them in D.C. This time they get a chance to avenge that loss. But again, Utah, you know, Utah handled business quite easily in D.C. and this time it's in Utah. So we'll see how they do. And then they return to the East Coast, but not to play at home. They'll be taking a trip to New York to play the Nets and the Knicks on the road before Christmas. We've been talking ad nauseum on Wizards Outlook about the issues the Wizards have had since the hot start of the season. But at some point, it's either find a way to halt this slide or to turn things around or not. This upcoming stretch will tell us a lot. And, you know, don't hesitate to catch Wizards Outlook following every game this season. Again, just follow us on social media, you guys, to see where the links are and whatnot to check that out. As for the Capital City Go-Go, last Thursday, the Delaware Bluecoats handed the Go-Go their first home loss of the year, 114-105. It was a back-and-forth affair for about three quarters. The Bluecoats started the fourth with a 17-3 run to blow the game open and allow them to take control en route to their victory. The Bluecoats are off. That put them at 8-1 on the year. Seven players scored in double figures for the Go-Go, led by Jaime Echenique's 19 points and 10 rebounds. Joel Ayayi, he barely missed a triple-double. It would have been the second in franchise history. He finished with 13 points, 9 rebounds, and 9 assists. Shaq Harrison had 22 for Delaware, and Paul Reed added 19-12. Capital City got a chance to avenge that loss on Thursday as they hosted Delaware again on Saturday. This time, the Bluecoats used the second and third quarters to take control of the game. They built their lead to as many as 20 at one point in the third quarter. The Go-Go made several runs, but they just couldn't slow down the Bluecoats enough to take control of the game. Jordan Sheckle led the Go-Go with 20 points. Greg Monroe had a double-double with 17 points and 13 rebounds. Charlie Brown Jr. led the Bluecoats with 19-10 to lead four players in double figures. I'm going to pass this on to Cardell for college basketball. What's going on with GW?
Yes, sir. More positive news, you know, some positivity this week. know, GW won his second straight game actually last night with a 67-58 win over Radford. GW standout freshman Brandon Freeman scored 8 of GW's first 12 points to start the game, helping them jump out to a 12-7 lead. GW stayed with it. They built the lead at 21-14 before settling at 5 with a 5-point lead when the teams went into halftime. GW was up 27-22. In the second half, the Colonials came out starting the half as strong as they started the first half. And with a 7-0 run, first was a 3-pointer from James Bishop, then back-to-back basket from Brandon Adams and Joe Bamisil. Bamisil being a 360 dunk. That run put GW up 34-22, and they pretty much never looked back. Bishop led all scores with 21 points. Freeman posted 16 points in a game-high 8 assists, while Adams added 12 points. And Ricky Lindell Jr. contributed 10 points, 14 rebounds, 3 steals, and 3 blocks with GW. Rashawn Williams led Radford with 14 points and 8 rebounds. For an AGW, they would take 9 days off for finals before concluding the non-conference season, looking for a 3-game winning streak on December 22nd when they host Maryland Eastern Shore. Yeah, and a special noon Wednesday tip-off on NBC Sports Washington and ESPN+. On the women's side, they knocked off Crosstown for Howard, 62-53. While it was a back-and-forth game throughout, GW used efficient shooting from three-point range, 40%, and free throw line, 12-12. Perfect from the line to edge Howard for the 6th win of the season. GW also held Howard to 31% shooting from the field and 26% shooting from deep in the victory. Sophomore guard Taylor Webster and senior guard Kiara Frames both retired for a team-high 11 points, while junior forward Mayoa Taiwo added a double-double with 10 points and 11 rebounds. Howard was led by sophomore forward Kaya Creeks, 12 points, and junior guard Yana Warren, 10 points, 5 rebounds, and 4 assists. GW will next face Lehigh December 21st. As far as my standouts for the men's side, got to show love to Georgetown freshman guard Aminu Muhammad. Scored a game high 23 points, grabbed a game high 13 rebounds, and dished out 5 assists, while also adding 2 steals and 2 blocks to lead the Hoyas to a 79-75 come from behind win over obviously longtime rival Syracuse. Man, it was a, you know, it's not quite the same, but you know, anytime they face each other, some, you know, some old feelings will emerge. But slowly but surely, this kid, you know, Big Pat Ewing, slowly but surely just giving this kid more and more. And eventually, he just going to give him the keys. Just like, you know, lead us to the promised land. And every time he give him more and more, this kid is responding, man. You know, he came in as a 5-star prospect, and he's been validating it. You know what I mean? That was a big-time performance here in D.C. over the weekend against Syracuse. Got to give him props. And obviously, on the women's side, even though it was a losing effort, I got to show Angel Reese love, man. 20 points, 10 rebounds, 3 blocks on the road in the loss at South Carolina, number one team in the country. No Diamond Miller. You know, you got to deal with a monster on that side and Leah Boston. But Angel showed up. You know, she competes. She, you know, she didn't have the best efficient shooting night, but you understand who you're dealing with. They, South Carolina is a monster defensively. So, you know, for her to still come out with 20 points, 10 rebounds, 3 blocks, when I know she was high on the scouting report, it says a lot about her competitive nature and her talent and skill. You know what I mean? So, you know, as Maryland get healthy, they'll be fine moving forward, man. But, you know, just want to shout those 2 players out for their performances from over the weekend.
Hey, look, man, I appreciate the segue to Maryland women's basketball. I definitely do. Like Cardell said, it's another top 10 matchup. Hey, that game was worth the price of admission, and I didn't leave my couch. It was a great game to watch. It was 2 top teams playing well, and obviously, you know, the game took place in December, not in March. Obviously, the 2 teams, both of them should get better as they get healthy. Both teams were missing some key pieces. Destiny Henderson, the Gamecocks point guard, the most dynamic point guards in the country. And then, you know, as Cardell mentioned, Maryland's been without Diamond Miller, which, you know, her and Ashley Wusu came into the year on multiple lists, award lists in the preseason. So they're missing a big piece. That said, the Gamecocks were able to hold off Maryland 66-59. Zaya Cook led the way with 20 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, and 2 steals. Aaliyah Boss, 16 points, 16 rebounds, 7 blocks. The overall depth was on display for South Carolina. Maryland, as you mentioned, Cardale led by Angel Reese is 20 points, 10 boards, and 3 blocks against one of the toughest front lines in the country. Dawn Staley has nothing but length and athleticism coming off that bench to surround the best big and arguably the best player in the country. Ashley Owusu had a tough night, finishing with 11 points and 6 rebounds. Katie Benson and Faith Monsonis each added 9 apiece. This may have been the first time this season where Maryland didn't get a solid production from freshman Cheyenne Sellers, and that's okay. Like, she's a freshman. In fact, this is the first time of all the top 10 teams they've played thus far where she didn't have an impact. Life will go on. They'll be okay. Leah Boston, Cardale and I got a chance to see her when she came to Maryland, I want to say 2 years ago. And as a freshman, she let us know what it was as a freshman, knowing it shocked. For those who don't know, she got a chance to work, been getting in some work with Tim Duncan, because that can't hurt already, you know, the best post player in the country. I'm sure that can't hurt at all. But look, man, she was amazing. South Carolina did what they're supposed to do. It's one of the best defensive teams in the country. And for Maryland, like, there's nothing to hang your head about. You're not whole. And what I took from it, what I was most impressed by Maryland, you went into South Carolina and you didn't wilt under the pressure. Like, it's tough to deal with them. And, you know, you had opportunities. You just couldn't get it done. And South Carolina showed, you know, once again, there's a reason they're 10-0 in a year. There's a reason, even with all the top teams scheduled in the, you know, in their non-conference, like, they've been in wars and battle tested. You know, it shouldn't be a shock. But if you want a more in-depth recap, feel free to get over to thefocustv.com. The recap is up there. And again, Coach Freeze made it clear for Media Day that it's not about the regular season in terms of the non-conference matchups. Maryland's faced, I think, like 3 or 4 top 10 teams thus far. And it was not about the result, more about the process. They want to make sure that they don't get shocked like they did last year, where everything was kind of sweet, got to the tournament, and everything went left. This year, like, there's multiple moments you can look back on before you even hit conference play, where you've seen some things. And no disrespect to the Big Ten, there's not a Leah Boston in the Big Ten. You've seen some things already. You've lived through some things already. And, you know, life will go on. Hopefully you get Diamond Miller back, as Cardale mentioned. You get whole, get some more depth, because, you know, they still don't have Shanice Lewis and whatnot. Like, they'll be fine. But, again, they already kind of tackled that thing of when they get the march, they can't be shocked by anything. Like, again, you went to South Carolina. It's already bad when South Carolina comes visit you. You went into South Carolina. Like, it's
many
not
teams duck, and many teams duck that trip. They be ducking that trip. They try to catch them in tournaments or in their building. They don't want to go there. So,
and even in the preseason tournaments, you're stuck. It wasn't, you didn't raise your hand to say I wanted that. Oh, they here too. But we got time for a rapid fire question, Cardale. What you got for us this week?
One question. We're going to Tom Brady, Buccaneers quarterback, obviously. Some say he's the GOAT. He said tight end Rob Gronkowski, who after, you know, recently caught his 90th touchdown pass, said he's the greatest tight end of all time. Brady said today that he doesn't think there's any question that Gronkowski is the best tight end in NFL history. It's been amazing to watch him perform. Brady said he's obviously the greatest tight end to ever play the game and still doing it. I think his ability to block in a run game, run routes in a pass game, win against smaller players, and then he's very clutch. He comes up big in the biggest moments. Do you guys agree with that notion? Octavia, start with you.
I mean, I think it's a little bit biased. You know, of course you're going to say that you've been throwing the ball to him for his entire career. So, I mean, I'm not saying he's not in the conversation, but I think that there are others that need to be considered that probably did more with less of a caliber quarterback. So I just think that there, you know, again, I haven't thought about this question, but just the top ones that come to mind, of course, like, you know, Tony Gonzalez, Antonio Gates, I mean, even now you look at Travis Kelce and what he's been doing, George Kittle, what he's doing now, granted that they're still playing and they still have a lot more left to play. I don't think you can sit here and definitively say it's Rob Gronkowski. I feel like it has to be an argument. I need facts and I need things to back these things up from what you're saying. Because right now it just sounds like you throw him the ball and I'm going to say he's the best. And I don't necessarily agree with that. Not saying that he's not a great tight end, because obviously he is. But I mean, he took a break, came back, you know, he don't really know if he wanted to play or anymore. So, I mean, we're talking about people that played straight seasons that, like I said, probably had less caliber quarterbacks than he is. So I definitely think that we need to give others like some type of thought in this equation. I don't think he's terribly wrong, but I would have to really go back and look at stats and stuff to really know. But I can't definitively say that it's him.
Wilson.
I know he's happy he got Gronk back. He was going through it a little bit when he wasn't in the middle of the field. They took his blankie away, and Tom was going through some things for a little while. You know, the Tampa Bay offense wasn't moving as efficiently as it was. You know, Linus got his blankie back, and everything's been cool for the last couple weeks. He's just showing some love to his guy. Gronk is amazing. He's just one of many very, very talented tight ends to have played this game. For example, like Octavia mentioned, Antonio Gates, you mentioned Tony Gonzalez, Kellen Winslow Sr. Like, we can go on for days. I got a stat off the top of my head. I'm going to show some love to Shannon Sharp real quick, right? Because there's a lot of guys, and since Tom loves numbers and stuff like that, Tom loves numbers because he won't throw numbers out there. So Gronk, as amazing as he is, playing with, quote-unquote, the GOAT under center. Shannon Sharp is the record holder at tight end for six games. For most games, I'm sorry, with 150 yards and a touchdown as a tight end. You would think in this passing league, you know, with Kelce over there with Mahomes, whatever, enjoying life with Tyreek Hill taking the entire secondary 70 yards deep every time he goes. Shannon Sharp is the leader with six of those games. So, Gronk, I understand what you're doing, sir, and I appreciate it. But right now, at this moment, I'd also like, since Tom wants to be biased, I could do that too. You want to know who's closest that's playing in the league right now to Shannon Sharp's record? That would be one George, crazy behind Kittle. He has four of those games. Back-to-back weeks, those games just happened. And Gronk, I love you, and that's great, but Tom, we just want to talk about a whole bunch of stuff and say a bunch of stuff. I can say stuff too. You know, like, I could also just say things. But again, like, there's that many great tight ends, and I'm sure it would be hard-pressed when we talk about all these tight ends for people to, think about that. Six games with 150 yards, some of the great tight ends we've thought about, we would just automatically assume, how many people would assume that Shannon Sharp's at the top of that list?
Hey, me?
No.
Yeah. Outside of you, you know.
But like, Broncos fans are going to know, but I'm talking about like today, because everything's the greatest thing since sliced bread every week. And I love Travis Kelce. I like all the current players, but example, again, all these great things, and this is not knocking Tony Gonzalez or Tony Gates, nothing. They're amazing, but this is why you can't make these statements just for no reason, Tom. Mm-hmm. This is, like, I'm happy you got your blankie back. Chill out. Like, chill out. Just relax. You're not even a bus type. He's not even Ozzie Newsome. Gronk is even
Jay Novacek with the Cowboys. You see what I'm saying?
He's the best tight end in the league for sure right now.
And I keep saying it's the resistance. He did that in an era where, you know, he had to go across the middle to get those catches, dog. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was serious. You know, I think I sent the you know, our group chat, I sent the highlight of the old video game NFL Game Day, and how before you play, they show the intro, is number dudes just getting hit. And I'm like, oh my God, dog. Like, I'm like, dog. Like, and it made me go back, because we would look at that about five times before we even started playing, just from the hit from back then. You would never see nothing like that again, dog. Like, you know what I'm saying? And it's still produced like that at that time?
Mm-hmm.
Nah, I don't. And the thing is, Gronk is bigger than Shannon, probably more athletic, and he's playing in an easier era. Like, I people don't want to admit that, but, dog, if the resistance is easier, you got – it's an X on your resume, dog. I can't give it to you, bro. It's just we know that, man. It's just – you play sports, you know what it is, man. It's like, okay, you the best in your neighborhood. Can you make your school team, or can you make your travel team or something? Or you're a great – player on in a structured environment, organized environment. Can you come to playground, prove it? Can you lead a playground, go play in the organ? It's things to prove. It's the resistance, man. And I feel like it's easier to play now in the NFL than when Shannon and those guys with Tony Gonzalez and all that. And Tony Gonzalez, to me, is the most talented tight end, period. Like, it ain't even,
honestly, he's not close with his speed and his size and strength and how he could jump. That's why he was playing Division I football and basketball at Cal. You feel what I'm saying? Like, you just don't do that if you can't hoop. You know, you're not a great athlete. It's just how you high major in two sports at the same. Like, you know, let's come on now. And I think Shannon Sharp even said that, but Shannon wasn't the most talented tight end. But, man, he was a workhorse, man, and he got the most out of his ability. And that's what it's about, man. You know what I'm saying? Blocking, understanding coverages. You know, even with the Ravens, man, he was still putting in work and stuff like that and older. And, yeah, you could say John Elway played with him, you know, that helped and stuff like that. But, hey, man, he still had to catch the ball, though. John Elway could throw it. If he dropping it, it don't matter. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it is what it is, man. But, come on, Tom, like, I get it, man. That's your man. You're going to look out, dog.
Yeah, that's what he just want his friend.
Right, he got his blankie back. He's excited. He want everybody to know. My guy's back. I got my security blanket. I'm comfortable again. You know, if something gets tough, Big O 87, he's right there for me. And again, like, we're in the league right now. We're like, there was no such thing as a defenseless receiver. I grew up watching sports. There's no such thing. People, Jack Tatum and company was out there.
Dudes, we get Goldberg Spear, dog. Like, Goldberg Spear across the middle. So I'm like, business decisions. That's what I'm saying. So if you don't have that element of fear out there no more, I mean, yeah, you're going to be catching everything. And Gronk would have been a target, best believe, because he's so, yeah, he'd have been, oh, they'd had to get him about it. Oh, look, oh, my man on my mom, Steve Atwater. Oh, best believe he'd have called it from him. Best believe. So, nah, we got to chill with that.
They would have went big game hunting at a different time for Gronk. So be happy you're in the era that you in. Just being honest. Oh yeah. He knows it. He's happy that he came along right when, you know, things changed. He even had that quote where he kind of low key called the people dumb that he's playing against right now that he's able to still play at this age. And everybody just giggled. I'm like, he's not saying something positive about y'all, but okay. Mm-hmm. He was like, I shouldn't be able to do this, but you guys got it. I want to thank you guys for hanging with us tonight. As always, yeah, pretty much. Like, he really might play to whenever because you can't touch anybody. You're not allowed to do anything. And the defense, you just got to hope you don't get a flag. Even when you do right, they get so used to throwing flags, they throw it because you stopped them. Hey, what did he do? I can't pull the flag back. It's too late. You're playing defense. So, all right, guys. Have a great evening. We'll see you guys next week. As always, and I'm sure many, many more things in sports will have changed. And hopefully, you know, sports didn't stop by next week because this, man, what COVID's doing and the NBA and NFL right now, we might not have anything to talk about next week, honestly. So hopefully both leagues get that under control because it's nuts right now. But y'all have a good one. Don't forget to get over to thefocustv.com. Wednesday mornings, our Roku channel. Friday evenings, 10 p.m. BCTV. You guys have a good one.